Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Floyd Earl Smith, a member of the club's Environment and Natural Resources Forum, and the chair for this evening's program. We're welcoming our listeners online and on radio, and we invite the audience to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org, and we'll also have this on bayNVC.org. And now I will give a brief description of our distinguished speaker, Mickey Kaplan. Mickey is a certified trainer with the Center for Nonviolent Communication, and she's co-founder of the nonprofit group Bay Area Nonviolent Communication, popularly known as BayNVC. She holds a PhD in sociology from UC Berkeley. She consults with organizations and leads workshops, international retreats, and organizational meetings. She hosts the Conflict Hotline, which is a monthly call-in TV show. It's on youtube.com/BayNVC, and she blogs at The Fearless Heart. Please join me in welcoming a longtime champion of women, men, social justice, and nonviolence, Mickey Kashtan.
Hi. I don't like to stand behind a podium. So I want to connect with you as much as possible using this medium where you're sitting in rows. It's not most conducive to connection, and I'm going to do my best to overcome that. So I wanted to start by giving a context for why this topic is still relevant. I have something that was written, I think, probably 20 or 30 years ago that I'm going to read to you that illustrates to me the difficulty that men and women face in terms of working together. The family picture is on his desk. Ah, a solid, responsible family man. The family picture is on her desk. Her family will come before her career. His desk is cluttered. He's obviously a hard worker and busy man. Her desk is cluttered. She's obviously a disorganized scatterbrain. He is talking with his coworkers. He must be discussing the latest deal. She's talking with her coworkers. She must be gossiping. He's not at his desk. He must be at a meeting. She's not at her desk. She must be in the ladies' room. Is this painful? Shall I stop or up to you? Do you want to hear a few more? He's not in the office. He's meeting customers. She's not in the office. She must be out shopping. He's having lunch with the boss. He's on his way up. She's having lunch with the boss. They must be having an affair. The boss criticized him. He'll improve his performance. The boss criticized her. She'll be very upset. He got an unfair deal. Did he get angry? She got an unfair deal. Did she cry? He's getting married. He'll get more settled. She's getting married. She'll get pregnant and leave. He's having a baby. He'll need a raise. She's having a baby. She'll cost the company money in maternity benefits. He's going on a business trip. It's good for his career. She's going on a business trip. What does her husband say? He's leaving for a better job. He knows how to recognize a good opportunity. She's leaving for a better job. Women are not dependable. I am sure none of this is news to anyone. You recognize the prevalence of this. So because my passion is about nonviolence, about connection, about creating a world that works for all. I'm not interested in making anybody wrong for this. I'm interested in trying to understand, what does this mean and how do we overcome it? And the it is the very familiar habit of interpreting, making assumptions, and concluding what is true based on observations. This is one of the core skills in nonviolent communication for anyone who has learned it or might learn it in the future, is to be able to distinguish between an observation and the interpretation or the story that we create based on that observation. And I think of this piece of writing as a really paramount example of how that distinction happens. The same behavior gets interpreted completely differently if a man does it or if a woman does it. And I'm sure that all the women in the audience have had this experience. So if we are going to create a difference in the way that women and men relate to each other, we need to find a way, first of all, for ourselves to be able to interact differently with what we observe. And then from there, start making change. So because I like things to be experiential, I kind of like thought of this provocative, dramatic way of starting. And I now want to give you an opportunity to engage with what arose for you in hearing this. So I would like for you to talk with each other for a couple of minutes. And I don't really know how we'll handle that in terms of the recording, but I'm sure it will work out. And I want you to look at two things when you interact with each other. One is, what is the variety of thoughts and ideas that you have about this? What are you thinking about this? And the second is, what's in your heart about this? What is it that is important to you? What matters to you? How are you feeling? Those are the two questions I would like you to address. Would anyone want me to repeat what I'm asking you to do? So the first one is, you heard a bunch of ideas, and we are habituated to respond to ideas with ideas. Sidestepping the heart. So what are the ideas and thoughts that you have in response to this? Let's hear a couple of examples so we know what we're talking about. Anybody willing to say what was going on inside your mind as you were hearing this? Please raise your hand if you're willing to say. I'll repeat. Yeah.
I felt exhausted.
You felt exhausted. And what were you thinking about it?
Same old, same old.
Same old, same old. Great. So we got an example of both. Same old is the thought. And the feeling that came with it is exhaustion. Now, I also want you to try to make sense of why would you be exhausted about this. And the why, the way that we answer a why question in nonviolent communication, is by connecting the feeling to what is it that matters to us, that we want. So I'm guessing that, especially hearing exhausted and same old, that you want something different. Maybe you want both men and women to be seen in their full humanity. Is it something like that? Or it could be respect for all people, or it could be whatever it is. I want you to find out and help each other find out, what is it that you want that is giving a voice, giving rise, that is showing up in the form of the thoughts and the feelings. Is it clear now that I repeated what I'm asking you to do? So let's take a few minutes, find someone who is sitting next to you, ideally someone you don't already know, although I think it will be a challenge for some people because you know so many people, and then see where that leaves you. We'll take about 5 or 6 minutes, and then we'll come back together and I'll hear from a few people what your responses are. All right. Let's wind down. Obviously, there is a lot about this. I noticed a lot of energy in the room about this topic. So I'd like to hear from a few people, especially from people who haven't been exposed to nonviolent communication before, because I want to find a way to support you in making connection between the topic and something that you can learn along the way. So if anybody would like to share, I would be happy to hear. Thank you.
The conversation took a little turn that I took the turn with it.
Would you say your name?
I'm Dorinda.
Dorinda?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I just mentioned that as a first-generation American, the way that I was raised was girls were very much protected, and the boys were allowed to sort of go out into the world and try anything and do everything. And I think that having grown up in that sort of very traditional, very conservative family, and then entering into a professional world, and it's not the same, obviously, but the differences between men and women are still, obviously there's differences between men and women that should be accepted and acknowledged and recognized, but the inequity that you see in the sort of professional life reminds me of the inequity that I felt as a child. Mm-hmm. And I sort of still resent when I enter into my professional life, I still resent little things that happened in my personal life as a little girl. So it reminds me of the similar things.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that there is a long-standing... I don't think we're done, if you're willing to hold on to the mic for another moment, because I'm hearing that this has been an issue for you for many years in some ways. And what I want to support you in doing is to try to imagine what is it that you want? What is it that you want to see? You're talking about all these little things, all the inequities. What is your vision of what you want?
Wow. I don't know.
Can I pause you while you're trying to reflect? This is a piece of tragedy, not you personally. Overall, that we are so much more adept at pointing out what we don't like than at being able to envision what we do want. It's very clear to me, it's been clear to me for some years, that without knowing what we want, the likelihood of creating something that works for us diminishes. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I just think that it's really difficult to verbalize what I would want in this particular case, because I've, you know...
And it wasn't difficult for you to verbalize what you don't like?
No, because it's something that I've already experienced. I haven't experienced this ideal,
yeah.
You know, so I can't really verbalize it or even envision it, whereas I've already experienced, you know, the things that I just spoke about, so it's easier for me to just say them.
I'm really appreciating the clarity of, you know, you're familiar with what's not working. You don't have an image of what would work. And I am inviting all of us to start with vision, to put attention instead of complaining, criticizing, being concerned, giving up, being hopeless, to just envision what it is that we want as a first step towards creating the world that we want personally and globally. So I'm wondering if you have even a small bit of something that you know that you would want. I have two thoughts about what it might be that I would like to run by you.
Okay.
One is, I am imagining that you want little boys and girls to be allowed the full range of human activities.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that speaks to you.
Yeah.
And the second is that you want respect for both women and men regardless of what differences exist between them.
I agree, yeah.
So that speaks to you as things that you want.
Definitely, yeah.
And I'm curious, with a show of hands, how many other people want these two things? Would you raise your hand? Now, the power of this is that you now have a sense of connection with an entire group of people who may have had completely different experiences from you and can be easily united around what you want. It's much more powerful, in my understanding, to unite people and move forward based on a shared vision than based on a shared complaint. I recently heard from a very amazing international organizer something that has stayed with me as a powerful notion. He said, to bring people to the table, one of two things will bring people to the table. Fear will bring them to the table, and hope will bring them to the table. Hope will keep them there longer. You see what I mean? Thank you.
Thank you.
Now that you see how I pick on people, maybe no one else will want to share. Is there anybody else that is willing to share what arose for you in your exploration?
Brought up the timeline aspect of it, like Carol, my name's Margaret, brought up, you know, that her mother was born like 2 years after women got the...
She was 2 years old.
Two years old.
When women got the right to vote.
When women got the right to vote. So that's very fresh and new when you think of just, you know, like one generation away and just the horrors that went up. We talked about the horrors that went with that. We also talked about... how some of us have experienced corporate inequities myself, and yet one of us said it's not quite that bad that in all corporate situations, but that it is getting better. But the thing that I really cherished the most was the comment. Was, of course, it's kind of very positive for a woman, was that when men tend to overestimate their abilities, and by the nature of our society, that women tend to underestimate their abilities based on these cultural biases. Mm-hmm. And that kind of understanding might free us of some of these, to recognize that.
So then I'm going to try to guess at least one thing that you want is the freedom to be your full person.
And I was raised that way. Mm-hmm. But I remember my first experience of being engineer for a day as a senior in high school and being like the only woman there. And they said, we would never hire you. They told me that outright. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, we would never hire you. And just said, you would be way too distracting. And just said it right. That was back when you could say that to a young girl. You could just say that.
Yeah.
We would never hire you. Luckily, I didn't want to be an engineer anyway, so I was like, eh, out of here anyway. But tried it on and saw what it would be like.
So you want that kind of freedom for yourself. Yeah. You want that kind of freedom for all women. Oh. And I bet anything, you also want that same freedom for all men.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. And again, I want to check, who wants that also? That full freedom to be for all women and all men. Yeah. How could you not? So then the question is, what does it mean? When we talk about this freedom, what does it mean? And how do we include any questions about difference in the question of freedom? So the aspect of this discussion that nonviolent communication brings and makes possible is the recognition that all human beings share the same needs. And each person has completely different strategies for how to meet those needs. And that the world that we have created is structured around restrictions in terms of strategies to meet needs. So, for example, if this person tells you, we won't hire you to be an engineer, what they're saying is the strategy of finding employment through working as an engineer is not available to you. That doesn't mean that you can't meet your need for sustainability. It doesn't mean that you can't meet your need for meaning. It doesn't mean that you can't meet your need for dignity, for contribution, for fun, for all the kinds of things that people go to work for. It just means that the particular strategy of being an engineer is a restriction for you. You have fewer options, not necessarily less choice. Is this clear? No. Tell me about it. What's not clear? The last thing that I said, how you can have choice when you don't have options? I will illustrate it with an extreme example that is my favorite extreme example, and I apologize to the people who have seen me do it. Tell me who your friends are, or I'll kill you. Do I have a choice? Do I have a choice? What's my choice? Tell or not tell? My options are very limited because the consequences are pretty high for certain choices. But I still have choice. Is this making sense to you? That one does? So give me an example of a situation where you don't experience choice. Because I more and more believe that one of the biggest stressors in a human being's life is the experience of choicelessness. Is such a cause of stress that I want to support all of us in experiencing choice even when our options are limited. So it matters to me a great deal. Tell me a situation where you don't experience choice. So your option, the option of coming here without pain is not available to you. Even coming here is a strategy. It's not a need. You see what I mean? You can still choose. What do you do in the face of not having the option to come here? That choice is available to you. If nothing else, even if you're tied up completely, you still have choice about what you do inside yourself. And if you want to be inspired in that way, I have a book that I would highly recommend to anyone that wants to be inspired. It's called An Interrupted Life, written by Eti Hillesum. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name accurately. She lived and died in Amsterdam. No, she died in Auschwitz, but she lived in Amsterdam and wrote a diary. She was 10 years older than Anne Frank, more or less, and had the same set of circumstances in the end. But, of course, they didn't know about each other. And she essentially opened her heart completely to the experience of the suffering that she went through. And to illustrate it, at the very end, when she was moved with a group of people from the transitional camp that she was in to Auschwitz, she dropped a note from the train, a card, and somebody found it. And what it said on the card is, "Tell them we left the camp singing." That, to me, is exercising choice. She didn't have the option of not going. She had the choice about how she was going to do it. Is now the distinction clearer? for me, it's very much not academic. It's a world of difference between living a full life and living a constricted life. You can live a full life regardless of circumstances. And that's the point that I'm trying to make around choice. We don't necessarily have the resources to change the options. Although part of what gets even more interesting is that if we have a sense of choice, sometimes through interaction with other people, we create more options. In other words, theoretically, you can be in dialogue with someone and get your way into this place. I have seen that happen without paying. If you don't believe that that possibility exists, you will not do it. So, back to women and men. There are limited strategies for both women and men in terms of who we can be and how we can act in the world. It's not affecting only women. I hope you all are aware of that. And in fact, in some ways, I have come to believe that there's more freedom for women than for men. Because when a woman takes on a role or a job that is a man's job, she's in some ways frowned upon, but also respected. When a man takes on something that is supposed to be a woman's role or job, he's ridiculed. So there is in some ways less freedom in that. You don't see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there is a beginning of shift and crumbling around the roles. But imagine a man who chooses to be a childcare worker as what he does with life. I'm not saying everyone. Often he will be looked at as a loser. So I just want to hold out that freedom means freedom. Freedom doesn't mean freedom only in one direction. It means freedom in all directions. So what I'll get you in just one second. What I would want is for women and men to have the real full freedom. And it's going to take work on our part to come to a place where we can really embrace that. So there's another comment in the back. Yeah.
Hi. When we spoke in our small groups, what came up for me just hearing you talk, and I agree with some of the things you're saying, but what I realize is that I think there's more distinctions on how people communicate that are not based on gender. That is that, I mean, as just this one example and how people react to, you know, man for your child, but more so it's cultural, you know, it's age, it's how people process information, it's whether they were born in the U.S., not born in the U.S., mm-hmm. what country they're from, what country is their ancestry, and the older I get, the more I see that it's really less and less gender. I think when I was in my 20s, I probably thought it was more gender, but especially here in the Bay Area, I really think there's so many other variances mm-hmm. as to how and why people communicate. And gender is less and less of an influence. And for example, when I was just saying I had spent a fair amount of time in corporate America, you know, I think my worst experiences were actually with women, unfortunately. You know, senior women that somehow didn't quite have emotional intelligence, and maybe there were men that didn't have that either, but they communicated in a more harmful way than men. So that was my particular experience at this one company. But so I really don't know if I agree with your premise. You know? I just wanted to share that.
Could you say what you think is my premise?
Well, you're talking about the differences of male and female. I mean, my sense is that you're really focusing on that distinction of male and female communicating, and there's a...
This is very far from what I intended to communicate, so I'd like to clarify. But first, I want to say that what I am hearing from you is that you see more differences around communication style. Is that what you have in mind, between around different kinds of groups than necessarily men and women? Is that what you're saying? I want to make sure that I got what you're saying.
Well, because, so yes, basically that there are, because I hear you talking about the male-female dichotomy and the differences and so forth.
I'm not talking about differences between men and women. Other people have. I'm not. I really want to make that point clear. I am not, I haven't said anything about there being differences between men and women. I'm curious, did other people hear me to say that there are differences between men and women?
I think you referred to an interpretation and an observation that maybe where men.
Yeah, but before you get as to why I might have been heard this way, I just really am curious to know if I've been heard this way by other people, because I was not at all trying to say that.
So am I the only one?
Okay. The title is Beyond Dualities. The way things are perceived. And I am not talking about differences that I am perceiving. A significant difference, and I'm curious if you hear that difference. And I am. It's very important to me that you feel happy and included. And I'm worried that because other people didn't have the same perception of you, that you might not feel you might feel a little uncomfortable. Is that true?
No.
Okay, so the point that I'm trying to make has nothing to do with whether or not there are differences between men and women. What I'm talking about is differences in how men and women are perceived and differences in how men and women are treated. That's very different to me than whether or not there is an actual difference between men and women. So to illustrate it, there are millions of experiments that have been done about some of these points, but just one was an experiment in which an academic paper, was given to professors to read and grade. It's the same paper was given to two groups of professors. One group of professors got that paper, and it said Jane Doe. I mean, it said some other name, but it had a female name. And one group got the same paper, and it said John Doe. Guess what happened? Do you have a guess?
John got higher grades.
Now, this is an exact example of where there was no difference, because there wasn't actually a John and a Jane. It was one paper. There was no difference. But it was perceived differently. Do you see now the difference between whether or not there is an essential difference?
Yeah, I mean, there's always an example to point out any kind of...
To point out anything, you know? So I don't know where this was, what school or university this was, what country it was in, what year it took place. Was it mostly co-ed? Was there more men in the class than women? You know, I mean, there's all these variables. So I'm not disagreeing with what you just said. I guess I see such a really wide variety of
So you want there to be openness to the possibility that other variables are more important than gender? Sure. And so now I'm very curious, what made you choose to come to something that was about women and men? Given that it's not something that you think of as important.
No, I didn't say it wasn't important. Right? I didn't say that. I said I was trying to just make sense of what I thought I was hearing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I could just as easily talk about any other variable in society, and this one was chosen specifically because this month there is a focus. I think it's this month there is a focus on women in the Commonwealth Club. So I was asked specifically to prepare a talk about this topic. That's why I'm highlighting it in particular as a way to gain entry into a body of practice that allows people to live fuller lives and to relate to each other with mutual respect and mutual understanding, regardless of gender, age, race, class, nationality, etc. So it's just an illustration. And I hope that this will give you enough comfort to stay with us for the rest of the time and make use of what I'm saying. Thank you. So now I want to transition into the question of power and love, which was the other piece. But because the question, before I go there, because the question of are there differences between men and women came up, I just want to be known for what I believe about this, which is simply that we have no way of knowing. And to me, that's not a cop-out. To me, that's a very deep experience, because until and unless we have a situation in which boys and girls are really raised in exactly the same way, we will have no way of knowing. And who are the people who are going to raise boys and girls in exactly the same way? I don't know them. So the experiment, in my mind, cannot be done to know how much, if any, are there intrinsic differences between men and women. So I want to lay that question to rest because it's not so interesting to me in this context. What's more interesting to me is the way that, in the way that we are trained, we get polarized, men and women, about what's available to us, what's appropriate for us, what can we do, what can we not do. So in particular, I wanted to take the lens of power and love, which in some ways are constructed to be mutually exclusive. If you're going to be powerful, somehow it's seen that you can't really be loving. And if you're going to come from a place of love, it is believed that you can't really be powerful. And it is that I wanted to highlight in this juxtaposition of these two human qualities, both of which are really precious to me. So I'm curious if people resonate with the observation, with the piece of analysis that I was making about power and love. Does it resonate for you? So if I have one way of describing the dream about what I want for men and women is to be able to embody both love and power, all of us, so that we don't have to sacrifice one or the other. And if I can remember what Martin Luther King said about this, if anybody remembers, please correct me, something like, power without love is authoritarian, and love without power is sentimental. So we need both. So the question is, what do power and love mean to us, and how can we bring them together, each of us, so that in our interactions with other men, other women, or people who are of the other gender that we are, we can embody that sense of full humanity with ourselves and others? That's my question. So what I'd like you to do is take again a few minutes to talk with someone next to you, can be the same person or someone else, about what are your associations that come up around power and around love? How do you envision power and love? Where do you have negative reactions, positive reactions, questions, confusions, anything? So let's take a few minutes and do that.
Thank you.
let's wrap up and come back. And don't be startled. He's going to do his thing.
Okay. Okay. I'd just like to remind our listening audience that this is a program by the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Mickey Cashton discuss Beyond Dualities, Power and Love for Women and Men.
So I'd like to hear a few comments. What came up for you as you were looking at the question of power and love? Yeah.
One thought that I had concerning the difference between power and love is that I was imagining or envisioning a scale where at one end there's a lot of vulnerability in the expression of love, and at the other end a lot of certainty in a persona that exemplifies power. But this is doesn't really seem to be a single scale there. It's just sort of maybe a misperception that's common. And I think of when I've really felt very powerful, that I've had the confidence that I can express my vulnerability without feeling like it's going to detract from my power.
Yeah, so at least along one of the dimensions that you've identified, you are dissolving the idea that power means being invulnerable. And you can see that vulnerability can be powerful and that power can give you more access to vulnerability, that both happen.
Yeah, especially when I dare to be as vulnerable as I can, I feel like that's a difficult thing to get through, and I feel pretty powerful when I actually mm-hmm. do that. And I always get results beyond expectations, which is a kind of a powerful result.
Yeah, so again, you see that the very act of embracing vulnerability has power in it. Mm-hmm. So it kind of like dissolves the dichotomy that at some point might have existed in your mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else? Please, over here.
As soon as you mentioned that conflict, it seemed to me very clear that power and love are united in nurturance. And the reason that's so clear is just my experience of my own grandfather and my relationship to him, and also whatever creativity I've ever experienced, there's a core of nurturance in any real creativity of bringing something to birth. And so at that point, there's no conflict. And I flash on E. Cummings saying that gentleness is the surest sign of strength.
So that another experience of where you don't really see a duality or dichotomy. You see a mutual reinforcement in the particular experience of nurturance and creativity. Mm-hmm. Anybody had something else to say? Please.
My partner had a very interesting shared observation just from our own personal experiences, and we discovered that for whatever reason, the women in our life tend to fall either in one of two camps. Either they're very powerful and tend to be almost like more masculine than your typical man, or the way on the other side of the camp, and they're very sentimental and very good about expressing love and emotions. And then the men in our life, though, are actually more in the middle. They can wield power and love at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive. And mm-hmm. I just thought that was so interesting because you don't typically think of men in that way, but we both had that shared experience that men in our lives were much more comfortable with expressing love and power, but the women either thought they had to be really super powerful or super loving, and had difficulty with trying to be both at the same time.
I'd like to get to know the men in your life. So what I'd like to speak to this because it reminds me of what you said earlier, something about how when women in the corporate world get power, sometimes you've seen them speak in ways that are harsher than the men. And I'd like to see if we can get some understanding about why that might happen. that doesn't make women bad for doing it, but kind of like tries to get an understanding of what is the experience that can lead someone to act in those ways. And this exercise that we're going to do is an exercise in empathy. And empathy is about understanding another person's experience from inside. From the outside, looking at somebody else's experience, you tend to see it through the effect that it has on you. And that's not usually how the other person sees their experience. So in order to enter a fully empathic space, we need to let go of how things affect us so that we can actually see what they are like before they had an effect on us. So let's see, what do you think? Why would a woman... I'm curious if other people have had that experience, that sometimes, not all women, but sometimes when women get into positions of power, their behavior tends to be kind of harsh or domineering. Has anyone experienced that? Would you raise your hand if this is familiar to you? Yeah, so it's not everyone, but it's pretty prevalent. So why would that happen? How could we explain that without making those women bad? Imagine what could happen to you that might lead you to do that. Yeah.
I've actually talked about this while trying to interview and get jobs and so on with lots of female friends. And we've come up with a theory that the women who, for example, are in a position to interview us or so on and so forth, they had... probably had to go through a lot to get to where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's kind of like, well, I had to go through it and it made me a better lawyer or, you know, made me a better whatever it is, professional. And I'm stronger because of it and that's how I'm going to be your mentor or that's mm-hmm. how I'm just going to treat all young women. In our case, so I think that's kind of in the corporate world. That's the only explanation I could come up with.
So
it's almost like a hazing, sort of.
So you're still, I think, explaining it from the outside. But one element that I'm getting that has at least some degree of compassion is the recognition that in order to get to some place of power, there's a lot of effort and a lot of trials that women, at least some women, might end up going through.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yes.
You know, aside again, I think I had agreed with what you just said for a long time, and I've come to believe, and this is just my general perception now, that it's less of that, maybe sometimes is what you're talking about, but really it really gets down to personality and character, and that some people just express themselves in a powerful position or in certain types of circumstances. It just comes out in a certain way. And I think for a long time it was the feminist view, which I consider myself a feminist, that was going on, and I really... The older I get, I realize it's just kind of more idiosyncratic, and kind of this overlay of this must have happened to this woman. That's why she's acting this way. Like, I think she was born this way. You know, I mean, this is who she is, and that's her natural expression. And sometimes it's what you said, but I think it's less and less. The other thing I brought up in.
May I, before you go to another thing, and I actually would like to also give other people an opportunity, I just want to say that one of the fundamental things that I have gotten from years of working with nonviolent communication is to have less and less of an interest in understanding who people are or what they are, what their personality is or what their character is, and more of an interest in understanding what leads people to the choices they make given the experiences that they're having. I'm not talking about the past, but in the moment, what leads me or you or anybody else to make the choices that we make. And I'm not finding the explanation that that's just my personality. I'm not finding that satisfying because it doesn't help me understand and connect. And I have become able through this practice to put myself in the shoes of people who do things that seem so different to me and make emotional sense of it. And I find that so satisfying. So that's what I want to do right now. Instead of saying, well, that's how they're born, I want to see what leads to those choices. Not historically, what experiences did they have, but in the moment. And the way that I ask that question is, what are the set of needs and constraints that might lead a woman to make this choice in the moment? And yes, do you?
When I experience power and love broken apart, often, I know it's always the case, but very often I'm at that time worried about how people are reacting to me.
Mm-hmm. I am really appreciating the way that you're saying this, and I want to restate it in my own words to see if that resonates. It's almost like if I have internalized the idea of either power or love, my energy will be outer directed. I will be worried about how I am perceived. If I am integrated inside, I am coming from the clarity of what matters to me and acting from that outward. Is that?
I'm going for something I want.
Yeah.
And it requires nurturance. Mm-hmm. Because I have to sustain it, and I'm trying to give birth to something, whether it's an art object or just communicating with somebody.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Angela. I hope it's okay for me to shift gears in reverse because I'm very curious to understand what other people's experiences in relation to the duality of power and love and how that translates in a literal term. Like when you shared with us your example of how when you expressed love that created results that exceeded your expectation, I was hoping you could share like literal examples of how that translated, what your expectations were and how they were exceeded, and how you expressed your love, and so on and so forth, if that's possible.
I'm thinking.
And I'm happy to do this. I want to say that completing the kind of like exploration that we started is also important to me, so I'd like to come back to that before we conclude. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, in... I had an experience recently where I was dealing with someone who was pretty negative towards me and approaching a subject where I know that we were at opposite ends of the spectrum, and I just started talking about how I was doing about it and inviting her to tell me what she was going through, and it's just that we were able to have a conversation that didn't end up in a fight for a change. And that by sticking to strictly just how I felt about it and not getting into any whatever story I might have had, I ended up in a harmonious state, which is really very amazing for me.
I can also give you another example from a situation where I'm working with two people in a company who are having some challenges in working together, boss and employee. And it's one of those situations where what the employee is observing about the boss makes sense to me. And the way that this person is saying it guarantees that she will never be hurt. So I have been working with her on how to express things. And it starts out with her saying things, not necessarily to him in his face, but it's there in her. You know, he's an idiot, he's out of line, he's making choices that are not good for the company, and doesn't let me do my job, and, you know, pretty intense language. And when she was able, with my help, to translate it into the much more vulnerable expression of what effect his choices have on her, he was completely able to hear her, which he hadn't been able to hear her in months and months. Is that an example that helps you?
Can you talk about more in terms of what her vulnerabilities are, or what is she saying, and why is she vulnerable?
She's saying, for example, that it was very painful for her, what he did, because she really wants to be treated with respect.
And she's vulnerable because she's sharing how she feels?
Yes. Okay? And she didn't believe it would have a positive effect. She was very afraid of doing this. She thought she was going to get in trouble. And actually, it was the first time that he was able to open up and own, you know, say something like, you know, I see that I've made choices that worked for me without considering the effect that it would have on you. Which he would not say in the face of judgment and attack. You see? Are you complete enough to come back to...
Yes. Sorry for interrupting.
No, I don't think of it as an interruption. I thought of it as a tributary. So, back to imagine yourself being a woman. You just got into a position of power in a company. What could possibly lead you to act, quote-unquote, nasty towards the people you supervise? Why would you do that? And that's your character is not an option as an explanation. You're making a choice, conscious or not, that is based on something. What could it be? Please.
Put people into submission.
Why?
I don't know, because you're in power now.
But not everybody does it. You know, the greatest managers hardly ever need to exercise their authority. Do you know that? They hardly ever get you to do something just because they have the power to get you to do something. They work with you and they create a shared vision of what needs to happen. They get you motivated by the interest in what you are doing. And that's why you do things, not because they tell you to. I'm pretty sure that there's research that proves what I'm saying.
I agree.
So why does she feel that she has to assert her power in that way? That maybe we're distilling the question. And that question to me has profound significance. I saw a hand over there and then up here. Joni, did you want to say something? I thought I saw your hand. That's why I'm...
Yeah, I'm Joni. I just had an experience about 2 weeks ago where I was at a festival and I was taking tickets for meals. Not taking tickets. I had a list of names. And if the person's name wasn't on the list, I was told, don't let them eat. And it was really a situation where some people were in a certain band. They came up and they said, we're entitled to this dinner.
I'm sorry. He's talking to me... And I can't pay attention to him and to you at the same time, so I would rather stop you because
okay.
I think it's significant.
Usually the room's cleared by 7:30 after people talk and so on.
Oh, I was not aware. It said 6 until 7:30, so I thought that it ends at 7:30. I would rather... I don't think this needs to be recorded. It would be a hardship for me to just wrap up in the middle. So I think what I would rather do is ask that as soon as we're done, that we all leave the room, and if we want to have conversations, we have them in the hall. Would that work?
That's fine, yes.
Okay. Is that okay with people? I'll try to finish a little before 7:30. This is the first time learning about this. And Joni, I couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm just telling about a situation where I was in. I wasn't in charge of a corporate department. All I was doing was letting people eat or not eat at a festival. and I had this list. And when the person came and said, but I'm entitled to eat, I'm blah, blah, blah. And I go, like, your name's not on this list. And I got, she was very aggressive, and I got forceful. Say no. But I asked myself afterward, was there another way I could have acted? And the question as it relates to why, or why I did that, because I don't consider that it was because I was a woman, or even an old woman, facing a young, aggressive girl, but just like, what caused me to behave, to take the role that I did? Because I'd been told, this is what, sort of like Eichmann, you know, this is your job. This is your job, and so you have to do it. And then when forced, when can, in a confrontational situation, I didn't find another way. And I looked at that afterward and said,
So in the, you had a thought, and then I would like to try to wrap up quickly.
Okay, I'll make this really brief. This is just speculation on my part, but perhaps a woman may engage in harmful behavior because she feels insecure inside. I mean, she wants to be respected, and so she sees a man around her succeeding, and they receive a lot of respect, and so she's, okay, I'll imitate their behavior and just be very forceful and very powerful and very dictatorial, because she wants respect for herself, and she uses a strategy that she sees men, that she thinks men are using to obtain that power.
So what to distill what you're saying is, you see this possibly as a strategy to get respect in an environment that doesn't tend to respect women. And so in some ways, I will add to what you're saying because it relates to my thought, which is some idea gets internalized that in order to succeed, I have to be different from who I would want to be naturally. And for a man, that kind of situation is less likely to arise. Not never. There are many other dynamics, including race, class, that could also overlap with this. Just if we kind of like just extract this, if a woman is told that you're not supposed to be powerful and, trained to be doing certain things in a certain way, and then suddenly I'm faced with a situation where I have power, definitely there can be insecurity inside about, if I act nurturing and caring and loving and friendly, would I be looked at as less than? I'm curious if that resonates for you at all there in the back. Maybe not. And if not, then I don't want to have a discussion, but I just was curious. I guess not. Okay. I'm curious if it resonates for people as a possible way of making sense of it. Maybe not.